was the Spurscast, episode 572. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am your host here on the Spurscast. Today, I'll be speaking with Project Spurs writer John Diaz about the Spurs' play in their last four games, the injuries for LaMarcus Aldridge and Jakob Poeltl, and the Spurs' small ball lineup with Rudy Gay at the five. Let's get this episode started. John, how are you doing today?
You know me, I'm a news junkie, and literally 5 minutes before I got on, they're talking about a presumed case of coronavirus near Fort Bend County. So you know me, I'm in Houston, and that's a little too close for home, so time to move, man.
Actually, right before I started texting you, I just got that update as well. So, yeah, I mean, best of luck, man. I mean, I live here in San Antonio. You know, it's obviously – we made national news recently this week with the whole case of the woman who had coronavirus, yeah. You know, walking around North Star Mall. So we had North Star Mall trending on Twitter. So, you know, we'll see. You know, it's obviously not something to joke about just because there have been some, you know, people that have passed away from it and the death toll keeps going. Fortunately, but Spurs cast listeners, we're here to talk about some basketball. That was a really weird way to start the episode, John. Let's
keep going. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Anyway, so John and I are going to talk here about the Spurs. So the last time I recorded with Benjamin Bornstein was a week ago, and the Spurs had only played two games after the All-Star break. Now, though, they've played four games since then. They had a three-game homestand. Then they played a road game, and one of them was a back-to-back. So first, let's go back to last Wednesday. They're hosting Dallas. There's no LaMarcus Aldridge in this game. And the Spurs lose to Dallas by 6 points, but they were really down by 19. So that game, they fell apart really early there. Then on Saturday, the Spurs were at home again. They hosted the Orlando Magic. And on that night, the the Spurs won by one. It was a close win for them. They led by 16 at one time, San Antonio, but Orlando obviously made it a ball game there in the fourth. Then on Monday, they hosted the Indiana Pacers, the Spurs, for the first time this season. They played the Pacers. They lost by five. This is a game where it's like almost like a seesaw where the Spurs, led by 11 early, and then they ended up falling behind by 15, though they did lose by just five. And then on the next night, the Spurs had to fly to Charlotte and play in, Charlotte against the Hornets, where they get a one-point win. They fell behind by 17 in this game, but they ended up they were able to come back in the second half and, get a victory on their record. So the Spurs overall, John, one thing I forgot to mention about the Charlotte game was that it was actually Coach Timmy who took over right before the game. The Spurs announced that Coach Popovich was going to miss the game due to personal business. And then Coach Tim Duncan was the head coach. And then we saw, Becky Hammon. We saw Will Hardy helping him out there. Mitch Johnson. They were all as well helping him out. So, John, I know that's a lot of, notes and stuff. Just kind of take it where you want with this conversation.
Yeah, 2-2 without LaMarcus isn't too bad, considering everything else that's gone on this season. It's not thrilling to win those two games by 2 points. You kind of see how they got lucky in the Orlando game because you burn two timeouts and then you turn the ball over, only for Evan Fournier to miss that layup. The Charlotte game is not as surprising. I would have liked it to not have been as close, but Charlotte's one of the worst offenses in the NBA. I've watched a lot of the Hornets this year, unfortunately, and it's little things like if your guys aren't taught to foul in that situation, that's something that where Charlotte is record wise and how bad the offense has been, even though they've performed better in the last week, trying to up the pace and get some of the younger guys minutes, it could cost James Borrego his job, depending on how patient the Hornets really want to be. On the other side of it, the whole Coach Timmy thing, I know a lot of people were upset that Becky didn't get, the whole interim tag for the night, whatever you want to call it. And I don't think I've ever seen so many people so angry that a guy that's a five-time NBA champion, two-time MVP winner, and soon to be a Basketball Hall of Fame inductee was coaching a regular season game in March on the road at the back end of a back-to-back. And that's no slight against Becky. But I understand people are probably afraid that if Becky doesn't get that opportunity, it's probably going to lead to her coaching somewhere else. And let me tell you, you don't need to be afraid of her leaving. You should be happy if she leaves, because that's another Spurs coach somewhere else inside the NBA that Pop has developed. If your fear is, hey, she didn't get to coach in March against the Hornets, I don't think she cares that much, let alone anyone else in the organization. These guys have – we've talked about this constantly, about the database – and the procedures this team uses, that it doesn't matter who's going to be calling the plays, who has the final say, whose name is in there addressing the media, they're going to run the same stuff, abide by the same principles and the same plays they always have. This isn't going to be Tim is going to go out there and head coach and Keldon Johnson is going to get 40 minutes. It's none of these. I just don't get why people are so adamant about Becky, or why not Will Hardy? Will Hardy's been with the organization 10 seasons. And it's kind of funny that they came out today. Woj had a podcast mm-hmm. with former Austin Spurs head coach, Austin Torres at the time, Taylor Jenkins. And he had a quote. I don't want to like mess it up too much. He goes, when you're an assistant, you find your coaching voice. When you get that head coaching job, you're the final one to speak. And it's ultimately, what are you going to say? And mm-hmm. Becky has what she's going to say already. She coached in Summer League. She won a championship in Summer League. Will Hardy's been coaching in Summer League for multiple seasons. I think that's an opportunity for Tim to find his coaching voice to see if he really wants to do this long term. And as Tim said in the post game yesterday, it's a collaborative effort. It doesn't matter who's calling the plays at the end. He's just standing around a little more than the others, holding onto his belt like he always does. He may have the final say here and there, and he may chew a player out like the guy said, but this is still, what does Becky want? What does Becky think? What does Mitch think? What does Will think? All these guys, I mean, good Lord, Will Sevening holds a clipboard and calls timeouts and tells you when there's fouls to give. I've seen it on the sidelines. Like, we don't need to panic over Tim coaching one game in March when this team isn't probably going to make the playoffs. I don't get the whole outrage. But anyway, I don't want to get too long-winded on that. It was just really frustrating yesterday to see the reaction on Twitter. And I'm just like, hey, if Becky leaves, she leaves. But this whole thing of her, of letting her coach in March so she can stay here and take over for Pop, she's probably going to still take over for Pop anyway if she doesn't go anywhere. Let's relax. We don't think Timmy's going to be coaching for the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, for me, you know, at the end of the day, John, who gets that win again on the record? Last night's win?
Pop.
It's all Coach Pop. Who got, you know, exactly. Who got all those, that year that Luke Walton took the Warriors, you know, to that early season streak, it was all Steve Kerr who got the record. Like, it doesn't.
And
you know,
Luke's turned it into two jobs since then.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, either way, whether it would have been Tim or Becky or Will Hardy, I would have been, you know, I'm cool with either one. Because like I said, at the end of the day, on paper, it's going to go as a win for Coach Popovich. It doesn't go on either Tim Duncan's record or anyone else. You know, the prior assistant coach, and I remember Torrey Messina, he used to do that back in the past. So yeah, I didn't make too big of a deal, even though, you know, I was the one who actually like not broke it, because the Spurs obviously informed me and the media, but I was the first media member to have it. So, you know, when my phone just started lighting up with all these notifications of you know, just like you said, like a lot of, you know, different takes from either, you know, people, you know, defending Tim Duncan coaching, people that wanted Becky Hammon to coach. So yeah, there was, and I didn't see any Will Hardy takes, that's for sure, in those mentions. So yeah, so anyway, they end up winning the win, the Spurs. And so now they are 26-34 overall, 11th out in the West, with 22 games left. You mentioned, John, you know, you don't think that they probably are going to make the playoffs. Right now, they have one of the toughest paths to get there. So I just want to kind of update the Spurs cast listeners where they stand. Right now, if let's just say Memphis goes on and win 40 games like they're projected to do, the Spurs would need to go 15-7 to basically jump by the Grizzlies and get that 8 seed. And what's tough about that is the fact that not only are the Spurs trying to get to catch Memphis, the Kings are there, the Pelicans are there, the Blazers are all there, and they actually have easier paths ahead, or as far as how many wins they need and losses allowed. So right now, it's actually the Kings who only need 13 wins and 8 losses to catch Memphis, although they do have a tougher schedule than the Pelicans and the Blazers and the Spurs. Then behind them, it's the Pelicans who have to go 14-7 to get the 8th seed. They have one of the easiest schedules. They have the 28th easiest schedule according to Tankathon. The Blazers right behind them who need to go 14-6. You know, and I should say that we are recording this, John, on Wednesday evening. So if any of these teams play and there's some results changed, then we know why.
Yes.
And they have an easy schedule as well, 27th. And the Spurs, there they are at 15-7. They got to go the rest of the way. And again, 25th schedule, they have one of the easier schedules. So again, you know, just based on right now, my money would be on either Memphis or New Orleans, just because Memphis has one of the toughest schedules. They actually have the second toughest schedule left in the league. So if I had to put my money on someone, I would probably put New Orleans to get that 8th seed. Or even right now, the Kings actually look like they have a pretty viable path toward viable. I'm using political language here. Anyway, yeah. So what do you think? Are you kind of in agreement with me? Like right now, you know, the Spurs are still in play, but right now it looks like a long shot for them.
Yeah, they've got a long way to go, and I don't think it's going to be New Orleans. I think it's going to be Memphis more than anything, not only because they've got that leg up already, but Brandon Clark should be coming back soon. He's been out the last 2 weeks. Josh Jackson, who I absolutely thought the Spurs could have tried to take a flyer on, has been playing great in his absence, and Jaren Jackson Jr. should be back soon, even though they've got the second strongest schedule the rest of the way. that's a tough team to beat. Sacramento's is 9-3 in their last 12. Didn't predict that.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got the 17th strongest schedule coming up. The other one for me is going to be Portland. Portland to watch tonight, Wednesday night that we're recording this. Lillard comes back tonight, and they're right ahead of San Antonio. I haven't looked at New Orleans or Phoenix because obviously the Spurs are just a couple losses away from being the third worst team in the West.
Yes.
New Orleans is obviously, you know, people probably want to see that Zion-LeBron matchup in round one, and New Orleans has played great, and they've got a great, you know, offense. They're one of the fastest teams in the league. If I'm not mistaken, they play Minnesota today, I think. We're not entirely sure. Daily fantasy stuff is in my head right now. So yeah, anyway, but yeah, I think it's going to be Memphis just with Ja. Once you get Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson healthy, they've got Jonas Valanciunas. Dylan Brooks has become a really good player. Kyle Anderson, even though he got blocked by Trae Young a couple nights ago, he's actually been playing pretty well. So I think Memphis is the team to beat, and I think the Spurs are just going to have to basically just admit that they're not going to make it. And I think we saw that after the OKC loss and the Dallas loss, that the locker room was kind of just they kind of understood. They accepted it. And maybe that's a good thing that they accepted. They won't play with this stress of making the 8 seed anymore, and they can play better, but doesn't exactly correlate into a playoff spot.
Yeah, and the toughest thing is, like, you know, they just can't have, like, these weeks. Like, you know, we're coming together on this podcast where, again, they went 2-2. They went 500. They cannot afford to go 500 right now at this point of the season. Yep. And I know they have an easy schedule, but, again, you know, they have to win these games. It's just there's no, you know, to get in the playoffs, they have to go, like I said, they have to go 15-7. And like Ben mentioned last week, this team has not shown us that they can get more than a 3-game winning streak put together. And they're going to have to get, you know, 4 or 5-game winning streak sometime in order to make that in these final 22 games. And so the flip side of that, John, is that, you know, you mentioned it right there. You actually brought up the Suns. The Spurs are actually, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, well, then we look at, you know, where are they projecting the lottery? As of right now, according to tankathon.com, they are 12th in the lottery odds. They would land the 12th pick, should I say. They could actually end up 13th in the West. Like you mentioned, Phoenix is not far behind them in their overall record. Phoenix is only 24-38. They're kind of right there with San Antonio. I feel like the two teams who are pretty safe of, like, getting the best odds out West are the Warriors, of course, you know, 14-48. And then, of course, the Timberwolves are at 18-42. So I don't think that San Antonio could lose enough games to catch those two teams in the losses. But I think they could definitely get, you know, up to, you know, becoming 13th in the Western Conference standings by the time the season ends, if things go badly for them. And of course, that would be the benefit would be that you get a better chance at getting up either top four pick or even the first overall pick. So what do you think about their lottery odds as well?
We have to mention that Memphis got the second overall pick last year with 33 wins. So, you know, just if people want to freak out over, hey, you should have tanked sooner if you weren't going to make the playoffs, you know, these lottery balls, no one's going to be able to project that. And granted, this is a weak draft, but if that ends up falling into a top five pick, hey, it worked out for all the better anyway. So I don't think, you know, people poo-pooing on the season and wanting, you know, to go get LaMelo Ball or James Wiseman at one or two. Like, Memphis got Ja at two and won 33 games. It can happen either way. So
yeah, for sure,
it's one of those things where we just don't know how that's going to play out. But obviously, you want your chances to be higher. You want to lose more to get better chances. But these guys aren't going to purposely lose, especially with Pop and with these veterans on the roster. They have something to play for next year. DeMar's got a contract to play for. So does LaMarcus. Pirtle, all these guys, regardless of injuries, they're playing for jobs. They're not playing to go tank and get a high pick and then go to the EuroLeague or another team somewhere else or on a minimum contract, you know? So it's just one of those things. Like, it's a double-edged sword at this point, and it is what it is. If they don't make the playoffs, hey, at least they'll be at a lottery team for the first time, and that's another great piece that they can build around.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, Michael DeLone put this on Twitter, how he thinks that even if they get a lottery pick, that they'll put him in Austin, that player. You know, that's just the way.
Yeah, you can't. Spurs, someone for me to cover. About
that. I know. Yeah, exactly. So, no, so let's move on to the second topic. You kind of hinted at it, and that's kind of, you know, the Spurs have, you know, as bad as the Spurs have played is this year, they've actually stayed healthy most of the year. They haven't really had a lot of injuries to have to deal with this year. You know, early on in the season, they did have to watch DeJounte Murray, and that was more of conservative, just making sure that he was getting back, you know, getting his legs back under him after being out all year. Well, now the injury bug finally bit the Spurs here toward the end of the year. It's not a serious injury, but LaMarcus Aldridge has slowly missed 4 games in a row now with a right shoulder strain. He's basically been listed as day to day. Every night that the injury report comes out, he's usually listed as doubtful or questionable, and then it ends up being that he's not going to play. So he's missed 4 games in a row. He might be back by the next game. I think it's on Friday. And then Jakob Poeltl is the big one where the Spurs recently announced that, you know, he has a right MCL sprain. They didn't give an injury timeline, but Jakob went on his own Facebook page and said that he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. It looks like it's a grade 2 sprain, according to Jakob. And that's usually about the amount of time that a player with a grade 2 sprain misses, that amount of time. And so, you know, they're only bigs right now, if Aldridge doesn't play in their next game, is Drew Eubanks, who we've seen start the last two games and also start the second half when Poeltl got hurt. He's played now in 11 total games. They have Chimezie Metu, but he's been on Austin, even with these injuries. They've kept Chimezie in Austin.
Yep.
And then they have Lucas Samanich on the active roster, but he hasn't even got no playing time. He still has DNP, so he hasn't made his rookie start yet. And then, of course, our rookie minutes. And then they've been running a lot of Rudy Gay and Trey Lyles at the five, which we're going to talk about Rudy Gay specifically in a little bit at the five. That's going to be our next topic. But what have you thought about these injuries, especially to Poeltl? And my question also would be if, like, let's just say we know within 2 to 4 weeks that they're definitely out of the playoff picture, do you think they'll even bring Poeltl back or just not even risk that?
That's interesting. I feel like with the scenario that the Spurs are in, we'll probably see them be more honest with their injury report than they have been in the past. That's not to say they're not honest other times. It's just one of those things where they don't have anything to play for. Maybe it's a benefit to sit Marco on a night where he's probably feeling a little bit under the weather and say on the injury report illness and give Keldon Johnson those first quarter minutes like we saw the other night. What I do find interesting, and it's not being talked about a lot, is that Chimezie Metu is on a non-guaranteed deal for next year. He's the only one in Austin. Quindary's up here, Luka's up here, Keldon's up here, and Drew Eubanks is on his two-way contract up here and starting. And it kind of tells you maybe where they see Chimezie. And the funny thing is Chimezie, I think, went off last night for like 32 and 15, if I remember right. So I talked about this on our Forever Toros podcast. You know, Chimezie seems like he's got a lot of tools, but there's always just a little, he's got a lot of tweaks to his game that he needs to make before it's viable at the NBA level. And, you know, Drew Eubanks hasn't played great, but they're only asking for maybe, you know, 6-7 minutes a half. And that's about all he's going to be good for, especially as he gets his feet wet. He has impressed me a little bit. Because you know me, I'm not a big Drew Eubanks fan, but at the same time, it's a good experience for him. And it's something where I think next year can be his final year on a two-way contract. So maybe they want to see what kind of value they've got there. Maybe they want to put him on the active roster and let Chimezie Metu go. I've been really impressed by Trey Lyles and Rudy Gay, which has been kind of mind-blowing. And I know we're going to get to Rudy Gay at the five, but so out of the last, I think NBA stats on the advanced stats only had the last three games, which didn't count the Charlotte game. The only lineup out of the top five with most minutes played was Gay, DeRozan, Mills, White, and Lonnie Walker was a plus 25 in 12 minutes of action. And then if you take in the Charlotte game, they were a plus 40 with an 83 pace, which I don't understand whatsoever. But yeah, it seems like the Rudy Gay at center, and he's kind of revitalized himself a little bit. He's obviously having a career low year by his standards, but in the last four, he's at 11.5 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, 2.3 assists. Outside of the scoring, those are pretty on par with his career numbers. He's shooting 45%, which is a slight improvement. And then Trey Lyles, 13 with 6.8 rebounds per game and almost two steals, which is really impressive. So, in daily fantasy terms, I've played Trey Lyles a lot this week. Anyway.
No, he's been playing really well. And one of the first guys you talked about there was Chimezie. And I do want to address, you know, his situation where you're right, John. It is surprising that with these injuries, you know, to their main two bigs, they're not even bringing Chimezie. They're keeping him in Austin. And they do have to make a decision. They basically have the rest of the season and they have Summer League to really see what Chimezie has to offer to the team. If they even send him to Summer League, which I think they would based on how much we haven't seen him play in San Antonio. Mm-hmm. And then by August 1st is what the deadline says. That's when they got to make their decision. Are they going to keep him for next season? If not, they don't have to guarantee his contract because he's on a non-guaranteed deal starting next year. So, that's an interesting, you know, question is, or decision is, you know, what is going on with Chimezie? Why don't they, even at this time when they have some rash of injuries, why don't they at least try him out and see what he can do?
Yeah.
Maybe the, you know, we'll see why. Maybe they don't evaluate him as high as what we see. Maybe sometimes next he goes on the court. What are you going to say?
And real quick to answer your other question, I actually do think they'd bring Poeltl back even if they're not in the playoffs, just because you'd probably want to see how he plays with the younger guys. Because we saw the lineup of Keldon, Lonnie, DJ on the floor. And I want to see if the Spurs feel like they what that lineup would be like with Pirtle out there too, because this is obviously someone you're going to have to commit 10 to 15 million to, and you want to know if he's going to be a part of your future. And if the case is that you don't, especially with how we've seen the results with Rudy Gay at the five, maybe that 10 to 15 is better off just saving it for extensions for these other younger guys in the future and letting Pirtle go and maybe a sign and trade scenario, something like that.
Yeah. So I thank you for reminding me there. I wanted to get back to Pirtle. I'm a little bit different here. So like, let's say that he recovers within 2 weeks. Well, then I can see them, because then it's basically like you recover, you hit your date, and then you have to go back and get reexamined, and then they slowly start bringing you back. So if it's a 2 week period, I definitely see that in play where like they start working him back and then we start seeing him coming to games. If it's the 4 week period, I just don't see it, because looking at the calendar, I mean, let's just say he does the 4 weeks. He gets back, he checks his results, and they're going to start slowly bringing him back. Well, then there'd only be like a week of the season left, I believe. So So I think that if it makes the 4 weeks, I don't think we see him again. If it's the 2 week deadline or 3 week deadline, then for sure. So yeah, we'll see what happens to Pirtle. And I agree with you. That's interesting to look at. You know, how does he mix around with the younger guys and that younger group that he's supposed to play with next year? I think, you know, I'm with you. I don't know if it'll go up to 15 million, but I think for sure we could see a $10 million offer from the Spurs, because, you know, I think that teams are definitely going to give him the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So if you're a team that wants him, I think you got to beat that. And the Spurs luckily do have his bird rights, and they can match any free agent offer sheet that he gets, because he's a restricted free agent. So that's interesting to watch at Pirtle. And I'm also obviously, you know, depending on, you know, when they're going to eventually, like, you know, start playing some of the younger guys, I am obviously eager to see Luka Šamanić at the NBA level. Yep. Even, you know, it's probably going to be garbage time minutes early on, but, you know, just to see him, because I know he hasn't even gotten to the games yet for San Antonio. So now you mentioned Rudy Gay, and I really want to spend some time here on him. So, you know, I actually pulled those numbers as well, the ones that you had mentioned from NBA.com. And actually, that was just in the last four games. I just put, you know, played over 10 minutes, and you basically read them out there. So now I went to Cleaning the Glass as well. And now that we have more data with Rudy at the five, because Pop had tried him out a few times, but not a lot. But lately we've seen that in the last four games. Now we have a bigger sample. Now, it's not a great sample. It's still really small, but it is a bigger sample. And it's basically 129 possessions. So now we have 129 possessions with Rudy at the five. The Spurs are scoring 106.2 points per 100, which is struggling. You know, it's a struggling number, but their defense is just awesome. They're holding teams to 92.2 points per 100. So I want to talk about the offense real quick for him, and then we'll go into the defense. So what are we seeing offensively? They're attacking the rim less than the Spurs as a team by about 5%. They're shooting 3% less mid-range jumpers. They've increased their corner threes by 4% attempts. They've increased their non-corner threes by 4%. Their half-court offense has really struggled. It's gone down by 6%. Their offensive rebound percentage on half court is down by 4%. They're getting, you mentioned this, John, their transition has picked up. They're going from 14% of their possessions in transition to 8% to almost 19% with Rudy at the five. Their offensive overall, it's not as efficient. Like I said, they score like about 112, and they've gone down to 106. And then their free throw rate has gone down by about one only. So that's not a huge issue there. Now on offense, what are we seeing again? We're seeing that the team overall is shooting more threes with him as a five, because again, they're spacing out the floor. There's more fast break opportunities, like we mentioned. They're less efficient in the half court. Check this out, though. On one-on-one play, according to bballindex.com, just on one-on-one play, Rudy goes from a B-plus overall to an A-minus when he's playing against centers, when he's listed as a center and he's going against, you know, just centers overall. So we are seeing that you're getting more out of Rudy on offense. And you mentioned the numbers there. And if you look at it, you know, his season average, again, he scored 19 against Orlando recently. He scores 13 against Indiana, 10 against Charlotte. And then he's doing well passing his rebounds numbers, his assist numbers, and also his block numbers have kind of increased too in this very small sample size. But you're kind of seeing that the Spurs are getting more better production on the offensive end from Rudy with him as a five. And you're seeing that the team, you know, they are struggling overall offensively, but they're at least shooting more threes and spacing it out a little bit. So what do you want to say about his offense, what you've seen lately?
I feel like it fits more of how he's played this season, because he's obviously struggled from three. So if maybe he can open up the floor for other people to shoot those threes, it's a good thing for the Spurs. Funny enough, it's just we saw Houston do it, and we all kind of laughed at what Houston was doing with PJ Tucker and Robert Covington at center. And then Mike Prada of SB Nation had an article today about how not only does it help them offensively, but defensively with these guys, it's like a bunch of middle linebackers out there, where they cut off the point of attack and you kind of limit these opportunities in transition. You limit the opportunities in the paint. And, you know, the Spurs have always been an elite team at, you know, protecting the paint, but the three pointers have been killing them. And it's something that now with Rudy at the center, they've done a great job of limiting that. And it's a good thing that they're limiting corner threes too, because I mean, obviously we've heard Mike D'Antoni's brother say the corner three is the most efficient shot in all of basketball. And the other efficient shot is any other three pointer. So yeah, it's just, I don't think it's sustainable long-term. Mm-hmm. Just because you want someone a little more athletic, a little more nimble out there. But Rudy's build and the way the NBA's played these days, it's very reminiscent of the G League, just because if you don't have an elite talent on offense or defense, you get these 10, these double-digit leads. We'll just limit it to double digits because I know the Spurs have been terrible when they're up 10, 15, 20, doesn't matter. You get these teams that if they can just start hitting threes, they kind of go on a run and it just snowballs on you and they come back really quickly. And that's why we see these mid-tier teams constantly blowing double-digit leads, because anyone can get back into a game these days. And if you can limit those opportunities, it's going to be better for the Spurs. And if they can create more of that, especially with Lonnie, I think he's up to almost 40% shooting from three, or if not over 40. And we want to see how he is off the catch. We've seen DJ open up the, you know, his mid-range a little bit more, even taking good mid-range contested jumpers constantly. And it's probably going to help Derek White too, because Derek White's someone that has played so many different roles with this team this year. Obviously, we didn't get what we wanted out of him this season, but it's probably going to help him. I think yesterday was the only time was against Charlotte when he got overly aggressive. Instead of feeding Rudy, he went to the basket, and that's somewhere even Bill Land was saying, or Sean Elliott was saying, you got to give it to Rudy there. You have to give it to Rudy there. And it's something to see moving forward. Rudy's obviously committed, I think, another $14 million next season. You want to be able to get something out of that, and you don't want another career low year. I don't think we'll ever see production like last year again. It's just someone that can space the floor, and if he can cut off the point of attack like we're seeing with Houston, then it's even more money for them.
Yeah, for sure. And you kind of hinted at some of the defensive stuff, and I want to kind of go into some of the numbers, and then also kind of what the numbers say and what I'm seeing with the eye test. So what are we seeing on defense whenever he's a five? You know, teams are getting to the rim, but just 1% more in terms of their attempts. So that's not bad if it's just a 1% increase. Mid-range, they're taking about 1% more of their shots, which is a good thing for the Spurs defense. The corner threes actually are going up by about 3%, but here's the big one. And you just mentioned this, John. The non-corner threes. So the Spurs allow almost 29% of opponent shots to be non-corner threes on the average night. That's 26 terrible. Now they've decreased that by 7%. And again, that's the whole ballgame for the Spurs. When you just look at their scoring from twos, from threes, and from the free throw line, they're always getting outscored from three just this entire season. That's their biggest gap and why they're a bad team. And so if you can limit that and you're a low-volume three-point shooting team as it is, you're at least evening the math game. And that's what we're seeing. That's the biggest draw there, is that the fact that with Rudy as a five, they're able to kind of contest more, get out there, out on the three, and limit opponent three-point attempts for the non-corner three. The half-court defense is just, I mean, the numbers, like I said, it's a small sample size, so just listen to this. Normally, they hold teams to 97.4 points per 100 in the half-court, which is 25th. It's bad. However, with Rudy as a five, they're holding them to 75.2. That's almost 22 points per 100 difference right there. That's really good. The teams are offensive rebounding, you know, grabbing more boards because Rudy's a five, so he's a little bit smaller. The Spurs' transition defense has gotten better with Rudy as a five. The defense overall, like I mentioned, and then the free throw rate has gone up a little bit. They're fouling a lot more with Rudy as a five. So my overall key takeaways from this data is that they're limiting non-corner threes, huge. They're playing some lockdown defense in the half court. I also think the players the Pop's putting around him, we saw a lot of Keldon Johnson the other night. You saw Lonnie Walker. You see either Derek or DeJounte. So he has good defenders now, athletic players that are out there with him. So, and so you see that in the numbers. It's painting that picture. And then just better overall defense. According to B-Ball Index, his perimeter defensive grade, overall, it's a C+, but when he's going against as a five, it goes up to a B. So his perimeter defense gets better. His interior defense, as we would think, it's normally an A-, and it goes down to a D, because again, he's a smaller player. He's going to struggle against some of your traditional bigs. So I know you talked a little bit about the defense, but is there anything else you want to mention there?
Yeah, it's just his ability to square up against a center, obviously, because especially with his advanced age, his injury history, we saw him getting blown by a lot when he was even at a four, and him guarding these centers. I think the only time we've seen a real dominant big beat the Spurs was Indiana, and it wasn't even him. It was Trey Lyles doing whatever he could against Domantas Sabonis, who's an all-star, and that's how Indiana beats you, is just slowing down the pace, going into the paint. And since San Antonio couldn't have the scoring to match it, they just obviously lost that game after coming back. But it's just – it's going to be interesting with LaMarcus supposedly coming back against Brooklyn. how they move forward. Maybe a good lineup would be, you know, starting Rudy Gay, but I don't think you want to take Trey Lyles out. So I think moving forward, it's going to rely more on Trey Lyles, but also seeing where LaMarcus can defend these centers, because if you're going to put all five guys on the perimeter, LaMarcus is obviously slower than Gay is, and the bench unit is going to have to deal without Poeltl. So maybe we don't see Eubanks minutes at all. We just see more Rudy Gay at the five, which would benefit the bench unit a lot more. But it's that final, the closing unit is what I want to see moving forward with Aldridge and DeRozan, how that works defensively when you have Rudy Gay out there too.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing I wanted to mention was that they've actually increased their opponent turnovers on drive. So when teams are driving against them these last four games with Rudy at the five, they're increasing the turnovers of making them turn the ball over. I agree with you there that even if Aldridge comes back on Friday on their next game, should I say, I think that we are going to see, you know, when it comes to the second unit, I think you're going to see more pop immediately going back to Rudy at the five. And then, you know, whether that's Marco at the four or even like, you know, switching up the minutes where Lyles gets some minutes with him back at the four. Yep. I think that that's something we're going to see with the injury to Poeltl. I don't think, unless it's like a team that plays a lot of traditional bigs, I don't think you'll see a lot more of the Drew Eubanks minutes when Aldridge is back and healthy. All right, so John, so let's go ahead and get ready to close this episode out. Before we end this episode, I want to remind you all to visit projectspurs.com. Fernando Garcia's latest piece is on assessing development of the Spurs' youth, part two. Colin Reed's audio extra is on the topic of rebuilding. And John, you have two new projects you've been working on. Can you let the listeners know about those?
Yes, yes. Real excited. Mike and I have become FanDuel nerds. I started recently going back to DraftKings. It's something I've been doing for years, but now doing it at a more not as casual of a level. And so, you know, there's a lot of websites out there that want to charge you for interactive access, for read access. And so we partnered up with, you know, one of our partners is Lineups. Lineups has great free projections. It's not always accurate. It's not always, but it's constantly refreshed and it's free. That's the biggest thing we want to get to. And moving forward, I think it's a good thing that we start covering the Spurs more in a daily fantasy sport aspect. So right now we're tinkering with the format, but like the first article we did was three guys that are probably going to be really heavily targeted in daily fantasy games. So we had DeMar DeRozan, who came off a struggling game. We had Trey Lyles, who was a really excellent value pick while LaMarcus was out, even though his price shot up like $1,000. And Drew Eubanks, who was a popular punt play because he's starting. Maybe if he can max out, you know, a couple, maybe like 20 minutes, he'd be worth the price tag. So every game, we're going to kind of go in there and do in-depth coverage on who to play for your daily fantasy stuff. Just search for it on site. We'll probably find a section for it. But I think it's going to be interesting moving forward, you know, to cover a more sports gambling aspect of the Spurs anyway. It gives you something else to look forward to when the Spurs aren't winning games. So if you want to go jump into FanDuel, stuff like that, I promise you Lineups is a good tool. You know, we're not pros out here, but it's a good way to make money and it's a good way to have some fun with the basketball season. The second project, something I absolutely love, it took 18 months, but we finally came out with it, is the Forever Toros podcast, which is for the Austin Spurs. My girlfriend did the artwork, so everyone knows Gabby by now. It came off an idea I had at like 3 a.m. and I texted her, hey, if we do this, I want to do it this way. Obviously, you were a guest on the Spurs on Six podcast when we had it that way. I've also got a producer friend of mine, Corbin, who has done our intro music. So it's a real personal project, and I'm proud to have it out there. We'll be recording bi-weekly. Me, Mike, Jonas Clark, our Austin Spurs beat writer. And it's just another in-depth look at the Austin guys. And obviously, we haven't been able to look at them a lot right now. But we'll be covering stuff like, you know, San Antonio has an open roster spot. If the Spurs are struggling, maybe a Dedrick Lawson or Dalton Holmes. Or even Jeff Ledbetter could be a good story to get a 10-day contract. You never know. And it's something that we just want to talk about. We want to give Austin a little bit more love, a little more coverage. And they'll be making the playoffs this year, almost certainly. So it's something else to give us hope moving forward.
That's good. I didn't think about that. That the G League team might make the playoffs, and the real team doesn't.
Yeah,
the NBA team doesn't. Not the real team. The NBA team. Real quick on the fantasy stuff, because I don't play fantasy, and I have like a lot of my followers are fantasy people because they like to know the lineups and stuff that come out. Anyway, how much are assists weighted in that? Do you get a lot of points for? Do you get a lot of like? I guess like, is there a reward there for a lot of assists? Because like, just think about last night. DeRozan only has 12 points. You know, it looks like a bad night. But then he ends up getting 10 assists, and that ends up becoming like 27. He got 27 points in assists, so he ends up basically being responsible for 39 of their points. Does that weigh it at all, the assists, or not? Not really in fantasy.
So points are weighed differently across both sites. I did not play DeRozan last night. I did not think he was going to be a good play. And I was a little bit wrong about that. I played Trey Lyles, which cost me, and Gordon Hayward getting hurt. You're trying to shoot for maxing out their value compared to the salary. And so the only difference, I like FanDuel more, but with DraftKings, rebounds, assists, and scoring are more important. FanDuel gives you a lot more credit for blocks and steals. And plus, the FanDuel lineup is completely different with a higher salary than it is with DraftKings. But DeRozan, I think I'm trying to think what game it was. I want to say the Orlando game. He was a popular pick and ended up kind of performing around average. But the Charlotte game was more – his value went up. His salary went up, and then it was actually – he actually did pretty good value-wise. So it's a tricky thing. Like, you've got these guys that are analysts and have their own projections and their own systems out there and a ton of money to bankroll these crazy lineups, and they keep funneling that money in. But, you know, it's one of those things where – we just want to provide a different side, because if you can build up a small bankroll and start playing other lineups and more lineups and stuff like that, it's something we want to help with. And with lineups, projections, and our analysis, I think it's going to be a pretty good project moving forward. It's worthy of your time if you want to get into daily fantasy stuff and don't want to play regular ESPN fantasy basketball.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah. So those of you Spurscast listeners, if you play fantasy basketball, you know, using some of the sites that John mentioned there, definitely check it out. It's over on ProjectSpurs.com. And then also check out the Forever Toros podcast. Look for that as well, wherever the podcasts are distributed. As always, continue to check out Steven Anderson's work for his analysis after each game, and then also sign up to become a Project Spurs premium member if you haven't done so. This episode was written and recorded by me, Paul Garcia. As always, thank you to Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. So, for John Diaz, I am Paul Garcia. Thank you. Have a